The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Reach.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Michael Arad, the architect of the 9/11 Memorial at Ground Zero in New York, the site of the World Trade Center. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish experts on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Although Yom Kippur is now over 2 weeks ago, I have to share an incident that took place at my congregation, Temple Emmanuel, here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live. It seems that on the morning of Yom Kippur, on the very Day of Atonement, Rabbi Jason Holtz, our fine assistant rabbi, came up to me on the bima of the synagogue and said, "Adam Sandler is here." And while I was very occupied with leading the holiest services on the holiest day of the year, I was nonetheless taken aback and a little tickled. After all, Adam Sandler, the comedian and movie star, is a pretty big fish for our small pond here in Tucson, Arizona. Frankly, I didn't believe Rabbi Holtz. But would a rabbi lie to you on Yom Kippur on the bima in front of the Ark, especially a rabbi who works for you? Well, in fact, it was true. Adam Sandler attended the Tot Yom Kippur service and later our main service at Temple Emmanuel in Tucson on Yom Kippur Day. He came with his own and his sister's kids. Rabbi Holtz led the Tot service, and he kept thinking, "That guy looks exactly like Adam Sandler." And when Rabbi Holtz asked the young children and parents what Yom Kippur was all about, the guy who looked like Adam Sandler raised his hand and answered, "You get presents for 8 crazy nights." And Rabbi Holtz thought, "That guy sounds exactly like Adam Sandler." Well, in spite of heckling the rabbi at the Tot service, Adam Sandler, the very one, otherwise, was very well-mannered, warm, Hamish, and down-to-earth. He expressed how much he enjoyed the service, chatting graciously with congregants and staff. He even told our preschool teachers who were caring for the youngest kids in youth programming what a great job they were doing. He got down and played with the children, took photos with the teachers. And then he and his son went to the sanctuary for our main Yom Kippur service. Sandler draped his tallis over the two of them, and they prayed with the congregation throughout the morning services and the martyrology, which I led. He eventually returned to the youth programming and hung out and played with younger children later on in the day. The reviews, or at least the ones Adam Sandler vouchsafed to those who asked him, were that he loved the services. Of course, what else was he going to say? Still, it was nice to hear. It turns out that Adam Sandler arranged for reciprocity admission with the Temple Emmanuel office based on his membership in Wilshire Boulevard Temple in Los Angeles, where he and his family live. My dad, Rabbi Baruch Kohan, who co-officiated with Rabbi Holtz and me here in Tucson, later told me he wasn't sure if Adam Sandler's visit to our temple was more impressive than my dad's own previous experience with two congregants of his during his tenure at Temple Emmanuel in Beverly Hills. Those two famous Jewish congregants, Groucho Marx and Barbara Streisand, not together. Although Hanukkah is the next Jewish holiday, it is over 2 months away, but nonetheless, I feel somehow I would be remiss if I didn't play just a little bit of Adam Sandler's greatest Jewish hit here on Too Jewish.
Put on your yarmulke, here comes Hanukkah, so much Hanukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we have 8 crazy nights. When you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's a list of people who are Jewish.
just like you and me. David Lee Roth lights the menorah. So do James Conkirk, Douglas, and the late Dinah Shore. Guess who eats together at the Carnegie Deli? Bowser from Sha-na-na and Arthur Fonzarelli. Paul Newman's half Jewish, Goldie Hawn's half too. Put them together, what a fine looking Jew. You don't need Deck the Halls or Jingle Bell Rock, 'cause you can spin a dreidel with Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock, both Jewish. Put on your yarmulke, it's time for Hanukkah. The owner of the Seattle Supersonicas celebrates Hanukkah.
The tradition of famous Jews showing up for High Holy Day services goes back pretty far. I suspect the first celebrity sighting on Yom Kippur happened in the days of the Temple in Jerusalem, and our own ancestors in America were thrilled to see Al Jolson or Jack Benny or Hank Greenberg in shul on Yom Kippur. My dad's personal recollection of the Barbara Streisand visit to services included her coming backstage, back to the office, after services, and asking for a copy of the music of the Avinu Malkeinu, which she later recorded. His memories of Groucho Marx, who attended services regularly on Friday nights, and whom I remember well from my own youth at Temple Emmanuel in Beverly Hills, where celebrities come much more frequently than to Tucson, well, his own memories of Groucho are kind of mixed. From time to time, Groucho Marx, who always wore a beret for some reason in his later years, would stand up during services and occasionally just start to do comedy routines, which were unfortunately not very funny. But it did make for very interesting Shabbat services. Anyway, Adam Sandler was a good guy here and a good Jew, and we were glad to have him. Now, the irony for a rabbi is that whatever else has gone on in services that day, however fabulous the sermon or gorgeous the music, all anybody wants to talk about afterwards is that Adam Sandler came to services that Yom Kippur. Which is okay. Because if a pop culture icon, who incidentally makes $25 million for a movie, can take a day off with his family and come to shul on Yom Kippur, then so can everybody else, including you. And that's a lesson that lots of us Jews need to learn these days. By the way, now that all the fall festivals have finally been completed, now that Simchat Torah and Shmini Atzeret and Sukkot are done, now that we can just be Jews without wondering what festival we're about to miss, it's time to come to services on Friday night and enjoy being Jewish the rest of the year. And so to play us in on this lovely fall morning, here's an upbeat nigun, a song without words used on Shabbat, from my old friend, cantor David Propus.
Yeah.
A Nigun from David Propus, often called the B'nai Jeshurun song without words. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll meet our guest, Michael Arad, the architect of the Ground Zero Memorial to 9/11, called Reflecting Absence. He's a Golani paratrooper whose father was an Israeli diplomat, and he has designed the most important memorial project in the world. Find out what it's like and how he did it when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft, and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989.
884-1114. Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. Sometimes I think my brother Vinny and I are the luckiest guys in the whole wide world. You see, to us, Mama's is more than just a restaurant. It's a connection to our past. Back in New York, food was the center of our lives. Our family got together for almost any reason to enjoy the great Italian dishes our mom used to make. The scent of slow-cooking marinara. The distinct aroma of garlic simmering in olive oil, pasta boiling on the stove. These are memories that remind me of family, friends, home. Our goal at Mama's is to serve more than just delicious Italian food. Sure, our pizza and calzones are outstanding. Our cheesecake is to die for. But we strive to serve you more. Call it atmosphere or mood. Or you can just call it love. We hope the next time you come into one of Mama's four locations, it'll become one of your pleasant memories. To Vinny and me, that's the measure of our success. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish architect Michael Arad. He joined Handel Architects as a partner in April of 2004. Most prominently, his design for the World Trade Center site memorial, Reflecting Absence, was chosen by the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, January of 2004. He's one of six recipients in 2006 of the American Institute of Architects Young Architects Award. And his memorial project is, well, now in construction. We welcome to Too Jewish Michael Arad. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this might be the highest profile memorial project in America, one of the highest profile in the world right now. How does that feel?
Humbling. But, you know, when you work on a project for 8 years, you have other things to focus on than that.
When you... when this was selected, now it's, I mean, it's sort of astonishing. This is now, selection was like 6 years ago?
The selection was in January of 04, yeah. So 6 years ago, I've been working on it close to seven, if you consider the time spent before the selection.
Does it feel like a life work, or are you sort of like, okay, enough, I wish it was over already?
It's a constant presence in my life, and I'm sure it will feel very different when it will open to the public and my role, and it will be over. I'm looking forward to that, not so much for, you know, for personal reasons, but as much as so that we can turn this project over to the people that want it and need it the most.
When do you anticipate completion?
We have a hard deadline. It's the 10th anniversary of the attack.
So September 11th, 2011.
Exactly. And the driving force behind us making that deadline, the man who really staked his credibility on this, is Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who's been the head of the Memorial Foundation for the past few years. And under his leadership, the project was given a much sharper focus, and deadlines and budgets and reality all came in. And without that sort of insistence on meeting this very important anniversary date, this project could have dragged on further.
Right. Maybe it takes a mayor who's also a billionaire to push a project through, even as an important one as this in New York.
I can't speak as a billionaire mayor, but I can say that, and I wish I could, but...
Yeah. You and me both.
Yeah, but I think it takes more than just money. It takes a serious commitment, and it's not just the mayor, it's his entire staff and many people at City Hall and various agencies that have really committed themselves to this project. It's not the kind of project that you... And for the obvious reasons that it can be done by a handful of people. It's taken tremendous cooperation. It's a site that is not even, that's not controlled by the city. So for the mayor to sort of step into what is very much not terra firma and force this along is remarkable.
Yeah. Extraordinary. We will talk much more with Michael Arad, the architect of the World Trade Center site memorial reflecting absence that will open. We now have the firm date, September 11th, 2011. We'll talk much more with him when we come back on Too Jewish.
If your parents or other loved ones are in need of assisted living, consider making the choice that Dorothy Daniels' family made, Handmaker.
Living at Handmaker does make me feel very independent, like I was still in my house. The best part of it is I don't have to clean it.
Assisted living at Handmaker promotes an active and independent life. All needs are met, including weekly housekeeping and linen service, transportation to doctor's appointments, restaurants, banks, and shopping. And living at Handmaker is fun.
Every 2 weeks, there is a man who comes with a saxophone, and we dance, and I love that because I love to dance.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes 1 and 2 bedroom suites and cozy studios with patios and balconies.
I would recommend Handmaker to anyone because I feel very safe and secure here. The people that work here are very nice, considerate, and that means a lot.
For a tour and consultation, call 322-7035 or visit their website at handmaker.org.
Adult Jewish learning at Temple Emmanuel is meaningful, challenging, and fun. The Adult Education Academy of Temple Emmanuel welcomes you to our fall semester of classes starting this month. Study Kabbalah or Jewish history, Bible or Hebrew, Jewish music or philosophy, poetry or Talmud or Zohar, spirituality and ethics, all with the best Jewish instruction in Arizona. And don't forget our excellent basic and intermediate Judaism courses, the Jewish Book Group, Jewish Home and Family, Adult Bar and Bat Mitzvah and Confirmation, and the Jewish Movie of the Week. Find out everything you always wanted to know about Judaism just by calling 327-4501. Classes are open to everyone and are taught daytime, evening, and weekends by outstanding rabbis and scholars like Rabbi Sam Kohan, Rabbi Jason Holtz, Rabbi Richard Safron, and other great teachers. Our classes are also available by podcast. Call 327-4501 for a brochure or to sign up. Remember, learning is the primary Jewish act, and Temple Emmanuel has the best way to do it. 18 new courses are starting in October. Sign up now for the Adult Education Academy of Temple Emmanuel fall courses by calling 327-4501 today.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You don't call, you don't email, you don't write. You can also get CDs of past and present shows, downloading them from the website at twojewishradio.com or at the app iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Well, I have one last addition from the holiday season this year. When I was building my own sukkah at home, I had completed all but an hour's worth of work on it, which should have worked out since I had exactly an hour one afternoon to complete it. I came home between meetings, changed into work clothes, and started on it. And then a few raindrops started to fall, and pretty soon I was standing in the midst of a complete deluge, getting soaked to the skin as I tried to finish my very wet sukkah. Unfortunately, because of my typically inflexible schedule, I had no choice but to continue working on the sukkah and getting wetter and wetter and wetter. It is amazing how much heavier wooden trellises and palm fronds are when they are soaking wet. I actually felt a lot like Noah, the hero of this week's Torah portion. In fact, I was wondering when pairs of animals were going to start walking up the driveway. It was sheets of water landing on me. By the time I finished the sukkah, I was one large upright puddle of water, and my clothes literally took 2 days to dry. In fact, my boots are still probably damp. And of course, as soon as I stepped indoors, the rain stopped, and it hasn't rained since. Sometimes I'm just not sure what God means by all this, except that clearly a sense of humor is involved. It was a great festival season, though.
We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Rav Cohen. Thank you for having me today.
Guy, you're from Haifa, one of my favorite cities in Israel, and it was in Haifa that the Israeli high-tech explosion began with a very small peep back in 1974. You worked in high-tech, but that was the year you were born.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about what high-tech means in Israel, how it's developed.
Well, it's funny that you ask because, you know, before becoming the community shaliach and the director of the Israeli Center here in Tucson, I was a high-tech engineer in Israel. I held a position in Intel, which you refer to as a software project leader. Now, today, high-tech is actually the, you know, that pushing all the Israeli economic forward. And it started, as you mentioned, with a small group from Intel that decided to come to Israel and to utilize all the resources that were found in Israel, especially in Haifa, because Haifa
Technion comes to
has the Technion, which is kind of the Israeli MIT. And regarding engineering, it's from the top 10 in the world today, especially computer engineering and electric engineering. And I think just between us, one of the drives of the high-tech industry in Israel, it's what you might refer as a chutzpah. Okay, as chutzpah in Hebrew. This ability, you know, to confront the challenges and to go in the extra mile, to do things that other people might say, well, we shouldn't do that. It's too risky. It's too ambitious. And this is kind of the main value of the Israeli high-tech industry. Take the risk and do it.
You know, it's fascinating. I was in Israel for the first time in 1976. You know, the year you were born was my bar mitzvah year, so I'm much older. Israel was a poor country, and believe me, technologically, it was not advanced. I went back, you know, several times, and each time it was a little more advanced, and then suddenly there was this sort of dynamic thing happening. Everybody was on two cell phones. It's happened, I think, in the 1990s. Everybody was into high tech, and that was driving the whole economy. When you were in the military before you went back to school, came out, started working in high tech, was that an intentional choice? Did you know that you wanted to do that, or was it just what everybody did?
Well, I kind of knew that I wanted to become an engineer, as my father was an engineer. My father worked in a company named Rafael. Rafael was the
military.
They prepared military high tech components to help Israel survive in a way. Part of the booming of the high-tech industry in Israel is due to the fact that Rafael kind of opened its gates and allowed its employees to get out and open their own startups using Rafael's technologies. And then they took technologies that the world, you know, weren't familiar with, and they brought it out. And I can give you one example of a company in Yokneam, Given Imaging. They took the technology that originally was used for missile, you know, to move the missile through a TV control, and used it for medical equipment. They prepared this kind of pill that has a camera in it that a patient can swallow, and it just gives all the TV video streaming of what's going on inside the patient to the doctor. So
it's been a tremendous, huge improvement in imaging and knowing what's going on in people's digestive area. And of course, it has lots of other applications.
Sure.
Thanks, Guy. We will talk next week.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant on the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Janos has been such a splendid restaurant now for a number of years. Not too many other places to go for that kind of meal, are there?
You know, less and less options all the time. That's one of the things that I'm proudest about. Great food, exquisitely prepared, terrific service, really personal. That's what we do. We prepare the best and bring it to you here in Tucson.
It's really fine dining, but with a special Southwestern local flavor.
Fine dining, Southwestern flavor, and really personal.
So if you want a special meal for yourselves, for guests, for anyone, what's the number to call, Janos?
615-6100. The website, janos.com. I know you like this, Rabbi. You can follow us on Facebook, too.
Thanks, Janos. I will look forward to seeing you there and anyone else who wants a great dining experience.
Rabbi, thank you.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We have been talking about France and the complexity of the French state, the right, the left, the center, the institutions of the civil service, and how all that impacts the perception that France is some sort of tremendously anti-Semitic country, which not really an accurate statement.
Right. France was the first country on the continent of Europe to give full citizenship rights to Jews, the first country to really liberate Jews from any kind of ghetto, whatever, the first country to create the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, et cetera, et cetera. And I specify on the continent of Europe because in some ways, Britain was ahead of France in terms of giving Jews rights, but Britain was always a kind of special case in Europe, sort of on its own and not really part of the continent. In any case,
And I would add, in some ways, Britain didn't, was France in some of those rights.
Right. In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. But in any case, I mean, both in Britain and in France in the 19th century, there were prime ministers who were Jewish. Jews could testify in court. They could practice any profession. They could own land. They could do all kinds of things that had previously been forbidden to them and which were still, in many countries in Europe, closed to Jews. All right. So how is France different in a negative sense? Well, there are two or three ways that we should look at. One is because the numbers of Jews in France were so significant, when France was occupied by the Nazis and there was the so-called Vichy France collaborationist government, a lot of Jews were affected by French government actions, which weren't really French government. It was really those Frenchmen and women who collaborated with the Nazis, and every country in Europe had collaborators, and every country had résistants, people who resisted. France had plenty of both, and there were plenty of heroes and plenty of people who died helping to save Jewish lives. We've, for whatever reason, chosen to pay attention to the collaborationists, maybe because it's so easy to make fun of Vichy France. And the French record in this area is no better, but arguably no worse than any other country that was occupied by Germany. Since then, what is different in France is that refugees from former French colonies in North Africa, specifically Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia, and specifically from the very traumatic French-Algerian war, which took place as recently as the early 60s, people tend to forget, within most of our lifetimes, these people have settled all over France, but particularly in working class suburbs of Paris, where they face an enormous number of social problems. And poverty often breeds extremism. These people attack the establishment more than they attack Jews in particular. Jews tend to be attacked in France not as a minority persecuted by people who don't like them, but as representatives of the establishment. So a lot of the current aura of violence and horrible things happening to Jews in France is in fact attributable to non-French citizens or people who recently became citizens but are really refugees from North Africa who are attacking lots of targets in France, including the government, the status quo, society as it stands, et cetera, et cetera. And the government and the forces of law and order and public defenders are doing what they can to contain this violence and this animosity. It's not accurate to say that they're not protecting Jews. They're not doing a good job. They're doing the best they can. They may be fighting a losing battle, given the demographics. It's a scary question about how much of the old France will survive the multi-front attacks of these particular immigrants.
It's an interesting question, and it has some bearing on a lot of Western societies with low birth rates and high immigration rates, too, and with Sarkozy's recent crackdown notwithstanding. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A man starts to tell a joke at a party. You see, these two old Jews are on their way. Suddenly, he's interrupted by a sensitive guest. Why do so many jokes begin with Jews? Why must you people always tell jokes about Jews? Are you an anti-Semite? I'm sorry, apologized the storyteller. I'll start over. You see, these two old Chinese guys were on their way to a bris. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Having completed the creation of the world in yesterday's Torah reading of Genesis, Bereishit, this coming week in Temple we'll read the great Torah portion of Noah, about the most famous mariner in all history, a man who rode out the storm to end all storms in an ark. From a forgotten Broadway show on the theme of Noah called 2x2, starring Danny Kaye, it's about what happens when you finally get off the ark. Here's a delightful song called When It Dries.
Why are you so gloomy? We're alive and we're afloat. After 40 days and nights, it's shipshape on the boat. Look, the sun's come out again and turned a rosy red. How can you be gloomy when you think of what's ahead? It's gonna be some terrific place when it dries, when it dries. You're gonna see wide and open space when it dries, when it dries. It's gonna be some terrific place. You're gonna see wide and open space. We're gonna have such a human race when it dries. The greenery's gonna have a shine when it dries,
when it dries.
The world'll be full and fat and fine when it dries,
when it dries.
The greenery's gonna have a shine. The world'll be full and fat and fine.
The best thing of all, it's one third mine when it dries.
Half a million growing things will spring up from the ground.
Half a million bodies will be floating all around.
Room to work and grow and build a company of men.
Think about how much we can contaminate again.
There's gonna be air beyond compare when it dries,
when it dries.
With drinkable water everywhere
when it dries, when it dries. There's gonna be air beyond compare with drinkable water everywhere.
As long as you don't have people there when it dries.
When it dries.
When it dries.
The song When It Dries from the old musical 2x2 with music by one of the most successful of all Broadway composers, Richard Rodgers. Of course, he was Jewish, and his most famous partners were the Jewish Lorenz Hart and the descended from, but not really Jewish, Oscar Hammerstein. But he sounded Jewish. In any case, the great tale of Noah is shared to one degree or another by other ancient books of lore and legend, notably the Sumerian Epic of Gilgamesh, another guy who had to build a big boat to save all humanity. But rather than read to you an ancient Akkadian, my Akkadian's a little rusty, I thought that Bill Cosby's version of the Noah story would play better.
You see, Noah was in his rec room sawing away. His He's making a few things for the home there. He's a good carpenter. It's Vuba, 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 Vuba. Noah. Somebody call? Vuba, Vuba, Vuba. Noah. Who is that? It's the Lord, Noah. Right. Where are you? What do you want? I've been good. I want you to build an ark. Right. What's an ark? Get some wood, build it 300 cubits by 80 cubits by 40 cubits. Right. What's a cubit? Let's see, a cubit. I used to know what a cubit was. Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark. Right. Who is this really? What's going on? How come you want me to do all these weird things? I'm going to destroy the world. Right. Am I on candid camera?
Bill Cosby about Noah. There's just something inherently comic about being stuck on a big boat with a large quantity of animals. And yet Steve Carroll managed to make it not funny. Eh. And yet, like Noah, we all must try to perfect this challenging and often broken world, whether we do it with an ark or in smaller ways, with mitzvot and acts of tzedakah, ethical actions and charity. The great Israeli poet Dan Pagis has a different take on the story of Noah. His comes from the perspective of, well, you know, the fish. Our Jewish poetry slam today comes from his poem Ararat. While all the ark survivors lurched onto land and in joyful disarray chattered and roared and shouted for prey and howled for procreation, and overhead came the rainbow and said, no such end would happen again. The end did come. For the carefree fish that had lived off the mishap like smooth speculators. Now, on stiffening soil, they were caught, their fins disheveled, their mouths gaping wide. They died, drowning in air. That was Dan Pagis' poignant, slightly nasty poem, Ararat, from the portion of Noah this week. Our guest this morning, Michael Arad, was chosen out of over 5,200 entrants in the design competition for the memorial for 9/11 at the site of the old World Trade Center in Manhattan. His stunning work, Reflecting Absence, is now being built, but there is much about it that is hidden from view. Find out what that is when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The Israel Museum in Jerusalem has restituted a Paul Klee drawing to the estate of the Jewish art collector who owned the work before it was looted by the Nazis. Harry Fuld Jr. owned the drawing Veil Dance from 1932 until 1941. He left the 1920 drawing and several other works with a transportation firm when he fled to England in 1937, escaping the Nazis. In 1941, his citizenship and assets were revoked under a new law that stripped Jewish citizens who had left Germany of their German nationality and property. His art collection was then confiscated by the Third Reich. The drawing was received in 1950 by the Israel Museum's precursor, the Bezalel National Museum, through the Jewish Restitution Successor Organization, which was established after World War II to distribute looted artworks whose owners or heirs were unknown. But Fuld, who died in 1963, left his estate to his housekeeper, Gita Gisela Martin. At her death in 1992, she left her estate to the United Kingdom branch of Magen David Adom, the Israeli version of the Red Cross. Recent research brought the drawing's provenance to light, and the museum transferred it to Magen David Adom. The Israel Museum strives to serve as a model for responsible restitution. We are pleased to do so now by restituting this work in exemplary fashion, as we have in other instances in the past, said James Snyder, the Ann and Jerome Fisher director of the Israel Museum. In 2008, the museum restituted two ancient Roman gold glass medallions to the heirs of the Jawlińska collection at Golucho Castle in Poland. In 2005, Edgar Degas' charcoal drawing, Four Nude Female Dancers Resting, was returned to the heirs of Jacques Goudsticker, a noted Dutch art dealer who died fleeing the Nazi invasion of the Netherlands. And in 2000, the Israel Museum returned Camille Pissarro's Boulevard Montmartre to the heir of Holocaust victim Max Silberberg, who placed the painting on long-term loan back to the museum.
Oh, my papa, to me he was so wonderful.
Entertainer Eddie Fisher, whose singing career was overshadowed by the scandal of his marriages to Debbie Reynolds and Elizabeth Taylor, has died. He was 82 years old. Fisher sold millions of records in the 1950s with hit songs including Thinking of You, Anytime, and Oh My Papa. His singing and good looks brought him a devoted following among teenage girls and others. He married movie darling Debbie Reynolds in 1955, and they were touted then as America's favorite couple. Their daughter, Carrie Fisher, became a film star and author later herself. But amid sensational headlines, Fisher divorced Debbie Reynolds and married Elizabeth Taylor in 1959. Taylor, however, dropped him a few years later. That's after she converted to Judaism to marry him, when she fell in love herself with Richard Burton on the set of Cleopatra. Eddie Fisher is gone at the age of 82.
Oh, my papa, to me.
Fanny Forman Butin, believed to be the oldest Jewish person in the world, died back on September 24th at the age of 111. Before her death, which was brought on by a stroke, the suburban Philadelphian was listed as the oldest living Jewish person whose age had been verified. Butin, also the oldest person in Pennsylvania and the 37th oldest in the world. Who is older? My goodness. Anyway, she was a living history book, said her son-in-law. She witnessed the invention of the telephone, television, flight, automobiles, the wonder of cell phones, and lived through two world wars. She was active throughout her life in Jewish concerns, and at the time of her death was a member of Congregation Adith Yeshurun in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania. Highlighting her historic age upon her passing probably would have gotten her mother angry, said her daughter, Marjorie Steinberg. She always lied about her age, so this probably wouldn't please her. May she rest in peace. And that's the news of Jews round the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish architect Michael Arad. He is the designer of the World Trade Center site memorial Reflecting Absence, which was chosen in January of 2004 by the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation as the memorial, the crucial memorial, on the site of 9/11 on Ground Zero. He has a distinguished career as a young architect. 2006, he's one of six recipients of the American Institute of Architects Young Architects Award. He has worked as an architect for a variety of both public and private firms. He spent 3 years with Cone Peterson Fox, in which he worked on a number of major projects and has designed and mixed-use projects in Hong Kong and Miami and elsewhere. You went to Georgia Tech, got your bachelor's from Dartmouth. Those are good schools. How did those compare to serving for 3 years in the IDF?
They were all learning experiences, and I think all three places, whether it's a sort of cultish inculcation into the Brotherhood of Architects or...
Or the cultish inculcation into the military in Israel.
Or fraternities at Dartmouth, which I didn't join any, but certainly it was a big part of all social life on campus. Each place required a sort of... an adjustment period.
Have you interacted with many of the families of the victims of 9/11?
With quite a few, yes.
What is that experience like?
At times very difficult, at times very rewarding and inspiring. I've made a few friends through this process who I would not have gotten to know otherwise, and whose determination to move forward with such positive force, not to allow a horrible tragedy to grind their lives to a halt, but to try and build from the disaster a better future, is inspiring to me, and I have strong doubt that I would ever be able to react so positively to such a negative event. And I don't mean this in a trite way. I mean, and I don't think that everybody needs to do this either. I think for some people, and I hope I never have to find out for myself, a disaster shuts you down and you're unable to move forward. And for other people, I think they find strength in the memory of their loved one to imagine a better world and try and make that world happen.
How did you conceive of the design?
I don't know. These things never follow any sort of process. I mean, how do we dream our dreams? Things occur to us, little snippets, and you kind of dig deeper into images and ideas that come to you, and sometimes from unknown sources, and develop them. I think all design is like that. It's always at the beginning of the process that is a little terrifying because you don't know if you'll find any design, but then you sort of slowly carve away at an idea until its outlines become clearer and more tangible, and then it sort of can spiral out and develop in unanticipated ways. I mean, with this particular design, the image that began this process for me was a very inexplicable image, this idea of these voids in the Hudson River. I thought about seeing the reflection of the Manhattan skyline in the Hudson River and the absence of the towers in the skyline, and trying to mark that absence in the reflection in the river. And this idea of these two square cuts, these tears in the fabric of the river, and water spilling into these two square voids, and these voids not filling up. And of course, you can't do that. Water would have to be frozen in order for you to cut a void into it. And I was imagining this liquid river with the hole in it, two holes. And this idea sort of was stuck in my head for months, and I sketched it, and I modeled it, and I eventually built a little desktop fountain to see if it could be done, and partially through serendipity because I was here on a work visa at the time that expired and I couldn't renew because of the INS being reorganized after 9/11. I had the free time to really explore that idea in depth, and I built this little fountain, and then I set it aside, and a year later, the competition for the memorial design came along, and I thought, could this idea be revisited, not in the Hudson River, but directly on the site of the attacks? And it suggested to me bringing the site, which Daniel Liebskin had suggested should be 60 feet below street level, up to street level, and creating this vast, enormous flat plaza, and then carving these two voids into it in a manner similar to those voids in the Hudson River. And it developed from there.
An extraordinary description. It's fascinating, trying to capture absence in tangible materials.
It is. It's like trying to recreate a moment of silence in built form.
How does it feel watching it progress? I know I keep asking you feeling questions, and architects don't always love those, but...
It's okay. I, despite being an architect, I do have feelings. how does it feel? The last couple of years have been really rewarding because... there's been tangible progress on the site. In particular, the last few months, it seems that everybody else has caught up to that, and you can really see it.
You know, I don't know if this is an appropriate analogy, but I think about walking through the Western Wall tunnels and looking at the infrastructure that's underneath the Temple Mount. You know, we don't really see what goes underneath the skin of things sometimes. And especially something that seems to be, you know, into the ground.
This is intended to look and feel like a memorial plaza, sort of a clearing in the middle of the city. If you think about the sort of these urban canyons of lower Manhattan, sort of coming out of one of these narrow, tall, vertical spaces onto this big, open, empty space. I think it will be like coming out of a narrow valley onto a big, wide open plain, and I think that sense of the sacredness of this site will be evident even before you step onto the plaza, just kind of registering this clearing in the middle of lower Manhattan. And I think that sense will only be amplified as you make your way forward. But most visitors should not be aware of the fact that when they stand on this memorial plaza surrounded by what will be towering trees, that they are, in fact, on a green roof above 70 stories of built space. We have a building that's that we're sitting on that's entirely underground. And that, I think, should not be something that you necessarily sense when you come to the Memorial Plaza.
I want to thank Michael Arad for a great visit on Too Jewish. The monument is reflecting absence, and it will be completed September 11th, 2011. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. My pleasure.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Adult Jewish learning at Temple Emmanuel is meaningful, challenging, and fun. The Adult Education Academy of Temple Emmanuel welcomes you to our fall semester of classes starting this month. Study Kabbalah or Jewish history, Bible or Hebrew, Jewish music or philosophy, poetry or Talmud or Zohar, spirituality and ethics, all with the best Jewish instruction in Arizona. And don't forget our excellent basic and intermediate Judaism courses, the Jewish Book Group, Jewish Home and Family, Adult Bar and Bat Mitzvah and Confirmation, and the Jewish Movie of the Week. Find out everything you always wanted to know about Judaism just by calling 327-4501. Classes are open to everyone and are taught daytime, evening, and weekends by outstanding rabbis and scholars like Rabbi Sam Kohan, Rabbi Jason Holtz, Rabbi Richard Safron, and other great teachers. Our classes are also available by podcast. Call 327-4501 for a brochure or to sign up. Remember, learning is the primary Jewish act, and Temple Emmanuel has the best way to do it. 18 new courses are starting in October. Sign up now for the Adult Education Academy of Temple Emmanuel fall courses by calling 327-4501 today.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none.
From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Rabbi Daniel Gordas, one of the most interesting voices in the Jewish world today, and the senior vice president of the Shalem Center in Jerusalem. Our playout this morning comes from Neve Midbar, a CD of Jewish women's songs from the desert. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
מנשות המדבר נבעתי בשירת נשמה בוכה יחיפה בחולות האינסוף טבלתי וצריפים לראשי סככה.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.